For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tilehurst End podcast with your host Mark Mayo, the Reading FC podcast by fans, for fans. And this week we are very delighted to be joined by a former player in Brian Howard. Brian joined the club in 2009 under Brendan Rodgers and then was part of the teams that reached a couple of FA Cup quarterfinals and the playoff final. And he was also part of the squad as the 2012 Championship title was won. Plenty of interesting stuff to Brian. Massive thanks to him for coming on, talking about his time under those coaches, what he could see in the likes of Brendan Rodgers, Gylfi Sigurdsson, Mikel Antonio, all went on to have great careers. What exactly happened under Rodgers as well, and the reason why he didn't play with the squad for that championship-winning season in 2011-12, went on loan to Millwall for the first half of that, and then had some family issues, which we go into, and also how his career as an agent has kicked off after his playing days. So without further ado, we'll jump into that then as the Tilehurst End meets Brian Howard.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Brian, thank you very much for joining us on the Tilehurst End. How is it going, mate?
Yeah, great, thanks.
Belko Paunovic has got on Reading off to a good start. How are you following that at the moment?
Yeah, I've done the commentary at one of the early games at the Barnsley game. I thought Barnsley actually played particularly well first 40 minutes or so, but then once the red card came, Reading just took over the game and, you know, deservedly won. So I've been watching it, you know, watching them closely since then, really, and I think that, you know, probably most Reading fans wouldn't have thought that they would be in this position after 9 games, but to be 4 points clear, it's been a fantastic start.
How have you found following Reading as a former player then? What sort of a club do you see now compared to the club that you were at back in the day?
I think now, obviously, well, you've got the new setup now with a new training ground. You know, you've always had the good facilities there. I think over the last couple of years, I've found it a little bit frustrating watching as an ex-player fan that, you know, changes in managers, changes, you know, to lots and lots of players, just felt there was no consistency and no, you know, you didn't really know which team was playing every week. And it's always hard to build a team and a squad together to get up and fighting. But yeah, I think they've got that now. I think there's a bit of stability and hopefully they can continue putting the points on the boards and, you know, build on the great start they've had.
As a player, I suppose one of the things that I was frustrated about with Reading, changing manager again and again, and so far it's going quite nicely with Paunovic. But as a player, do you kind of feel like it's a bit of a strange scenario with Reading having, you know, you've got different manager every year, basically. You get to October, you sack the next bloke comes in. Do you find, is that weird as a player when you're in the dressing room thinking, well, this bloke's just come in, but I know he's not going to last very long?
Yeah, and it's not only that, it's always stop start, and, you know, one manager might have signed you and you've signed for that manager and want to play for him. A new manager comes in and you've got to win him over, you've got to start again. The manager might not like you, and then you're thinking, well, if I'm not playing or I'm frustrated, then actually he might not be there that long, so I don't really care. Or there's others that, you know, want to really then fight for a place, get back in, and then the manager goes again. It's always difficult for a player. I mean, you still got to do your job and be professional every day, but, you know, you don't know if you're coming or going either.
Yeah, there must be that real sense of uncertainty. And for you, you joined Reading in September 2009. You'd had a bit of a sort of interest in Reading, I suppose, for the season before that as a Sheffield United player in a playoff battle. Well, I suppose it was an automatic promotion battle with Reading in 08-09. And I remember you coming down as a Sheffield United player, scoring a winner at the Medeski Stadium in what appeared or what certainly felt like a very dramatic turn against Reading for that sort of promotion battle. What are your memories of going up against Reading? As that was their first year in the Championship, I seem to remember, after being in the Premier League.
Yeah, I was always remember they were tough games. Always, you know, it was always a battle. You know, Reading always had a real fit team. And I remember Reading came up to Bramall Lane and turned us over. We didn't get turned over too many times that year, and they turned us over 2-0. And I remember Kevin Blackwell, the manager, and putting up the stats on the board. And I think it was the only time all season we got outrun as a team. So we knew that going down to that game at the Majeski, that we had to work harder, probably what we worked all season, to get the 3 points. We managed to do it. And like you said, I think that put us in pole position for automatic promotion that day. I think put us second in the league. But we couldn't get it over the line. And, you know, us at Sheffield United and obviously Reading both got turned over by Burnley in the playoffs.
Yeah, certainly remember Reading finishing fourth in a three-horse race. That year was a interesting one. And you started the season with Sheffield United. The season after that, you played a few games. And what was the talk of potentially going? You went in a kind of semi-swap deal in the end for James Harper going the other way. How did that come about?
Yeah, it was funny because Brendan Rodgers was actually at that game. He came to, I think, kind of knew that he was potentially getting the job, the Reading job. So he came to watch the Reading Sheffield United game, and obviously had a particularly decent game then. And he was with my agent at the time. We had the same agent, and he said he would always like the opportunity to work with me if it ever came about. When we lost in the playoffs. The parachute money had run out for Sheffield United, and I needed to balance the books a little bit. I started the season. There was an interest in Reading, and as soon as there was interest, that it was something I was keen to pursue because Brendan had a fantastic, people thought very highly of him as a young coach. It was something that I was keen to add to my game, what he was trying to build at Reading. Obviously moving back down south was a massive factor, and once the deal was spoken about, Kevin Blackwell said, look, don't really want to lose you, but I need to balance the books, I need to get one out to get one in. And I think they managed to kind of put James Harper in the deal to try and balance out some of the money. So as soon as I knew about it, then I was keen to come.
And Brendan Rodgers at that point, as you say, was an up-and-coming coach. Reading fans very excited to have him. Seemed like a natural fit, knew the area, knew the club very well. Safe to say that, we'll get into a second as to why it didn't work out, but given the career that he's had, did you see those glimpses at that time? Were you working under him thinking, this guy's going to be a really good manager?
Yeah. Knew it from day one, the first training session. I thought, this guy is different. And every single one of his training sessions were brilliant. It was a different session every day, always got you thinking, always, you should always be up for training anyway, but always got you excited for training. But unfortunately, we just couldn't replicate it on a Saturday. I mean, some of our performances were fantastic. We just couldn't seem to score, and then we're letting sloppy goals. And I think it was a transitional period that, Reading played a certain way under Steve Coppell, and then Brendan coming in and tried to change it. And I think he needed a bit more time to change it, and I'm sure if he stayed, he would have gone on and done with Reading what he's done, at Celtic, Liverpool and Leicester.
Yeah, do you feel like some of the players, maybe they probably, perhaps not everyone was maybe bought into what Rodgers was doing? Because back in, it's 10 years ago now, you're talking about everyone knew about sort of passing football and tiki-taka and everything like that, but it hadn't really reached the Championship at that point. Do you think it was a case that maybe there were some players who weren't as keen on it as others?
I don't think it wasn't keen. I just think that, maybe they were used to playing a certain way and that was the way they were playing. So to completely change their game, they found it difficult. I don't think they were ever against Brendan or disliked him or lost faith in it. I just think that, I don't like talking disrespectfully about teammates that, weren't really right for that style of play. But you can't just change a whole squad in one summer and expect results. So, brought in three or four of his own players, worked with others. At that time, he had a group of real good youngsters coming through, so he wanted to blood those. So it was very much a transitional squad.
No, of course. And you yourself as a technical player, have you always found that it'd be interesting if you came up through the academy systems and everything now, because it seems like, from the goalkeeper forward, everyone sort of taught to play with the ball. How do you think that your career perhaps would have fared differently as a player that very much suited the sort of style that is absolutely commonplace now?
I go to a lot of games now, and a lot of the time I sit up there and go, God, I wish I was out there playing today, because there was a lot of Saturday afternoons or Tuesday nights that, the ball did get whacked over your head a bit too much. And now I see teams playing out through the back, playing through the lines, playing two-touch, quick football through midfield. I just sit there and purr sometimes. I wish my legs still worked probably, and I could be out there today.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that you have the systems where I suppose it's very wing orientated, and it's an interesting way to find yourself into that. And Brian McDermott came in for Reading, and obviously had a lot of success playing that football. But that first sort of two-thirds of the season that he was in, he had two very good sort of technical central players in yourself and Gylfi Sigurdsson as well. And how did that, you know, how was that flip over from Rodgers to McDermott? How did that sort of play out for yourself?
Well, I was injured at the start, and so I missed the kind of last few games for Brendan, so I broke my jaw. So I missed that, and then I missed Brian's, or the start of Brian's reign. So obviously, he was caretaker for a while before he eventually got the job. And then in similar to what we spoke about then, it was one where Brian had other players there. He wanted to play a certain way, and I had to win Brian over and get back in the team. And, you know, I managed to do that in the end. But, you know, he built on the basis of what Brendan had had there and then just tweaked things and added to it. And, you know, I think Shane Long getting fully fit was a massive one. I think that's what we missed at the start of the season, that main focal point, that striker. And with his pace and power, you then had obviously Joby and Jimmy on the wings, who were both fantastic players. You know, Brian just realised that we've got a strength here in pace and power. Why mess around with the ball in the middle of the park when we can get these boys on the ball further up the pitch? And like I said, it was very successful.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? Because with that sort of style of play, the fact the results started to come, how, when you sort of compare the atmospheres around the club, you say, obviously, look, you know, players respected Rodgers. There was a sense that it was going to come. But the fact that it did then start coming under McDermott, how did you detect the atmosphere change around that? And also with the fans, because a lot of the fans, you know, certainly started getting frustrated with Rodgers. McDermott came in and everything changed and felt like largely for the better.
Yeah, I think it's a confidence thing. You know, I think that, you know, at the end of Brendan's reign, there's a lot of games where we probably played better and, you know, had more possession, created more chances, but we didn't get the results. You know, Brian simplifying things a bit, we got results. Once you get two or three results, I mean, that squad was far too good not to be at the top end of the table. So it's just about getting it right and breeding confidence. And they said, once the results start to come, the boys on the pitch start believing it, the crowd then buy into it, and yeah, you almost get that extra man, you know, with the crowd supporting you, and you all believing in the same thing.
Yeah, it's funny as well, because with that McDermott, the reign that he, you know, the caretaker reign into the permanent reign, he started off, I think there was a game at Plymouth away in December where I think it's 4-1 to Plymouth. I think Reading played very, very poorly, and that kind of gets luckily forgotten these days, because what he then did a few, I think it's about a week and a half later, was against Liverpool in the cup. Yeah. And, you know, you came off the bench in that FA Cup win. It was a huge moment. How much was it as a inside the dressing room sort of confidence boost, as much as anything?
Yeah, massively for the whole dressing room and personally for myself as well, because I think the Plymouth game was the last game I missed due to injury. You know, got myself back fit after that. And I think it was, you know, the Liverpool game was on the horizon. So that was always the goal to try and get back a bit earlier and get fit for that. So I was lucky enough to come off the bench in both games and return from injury. And, you know, you get a good result at home and you go to Anfield and win, and probably deservedly won as well. You know, it just breeds massive confidence. And then you just go on from that. The cup runs, I think, then helped, you know, pick the league form up. And, you know, we finished that season particularly well, I think, in the league. I think we beat Preston 4-0 at home. I think we beat Sheffield Wednesday 5-0. I think we hit Peterborough for 7. I think we were, you know, on real top form, and I think we were gutted the season, you know, finished. I think if there was 10 more games, we'd have been right up in the mix.
No, it certainly was that sense of, there was always that playoff dream was just a little bit too far out of reach. But I was just thinking then, talking about Anfield, you quite like an FA Cup upset at Anfield, don't you? You had a famous one with Barnsley a few years earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, I was chatting to someone about this the other day, and they said about Anfield and it's a tough place to go. And I said, well, I've played there twice and won there twice, so I don't know what this place is about. But great memories. And, you know, I think Longy scored a great header from Bryn's cross after the little nutmeg. And Gylfi from the penalty spot was cool as. You know, just sort of see him doing all the time in the Premier League now. So, always great to go and get a result, something like that. And like I said, it just bred confidence throughout the squad then.
Yeah, the FA Cup run, I think it was the first quarterfinal Reading had reached in since 1927. So it's funny enough, got two in a row, basically, didn't we? So that was brilliant. And it came with that West Brom kind of epic two-leg battle again, effectively, as it were. And I was watching the highlights from this the other day, because it was a, you know... West Brom took the lead twice, going 1-0 up and 2-1. And I seem to, I remember it at the time as I was in the stands. It's probably your equaliser right at the end of that game, or to bring it into extra time, probably one of the most celebrated Reading goals I've been in the stands for. And what's your memories of that? Because I watched the highlights the other day and I kind of looked through all three goals and I was like, we got gifted in a lot of sense all those goals. It was amazing.
Yeah, I think, one of my favourite Reading games that I think the whole atmosphere Tuesday night at the Hawthorns, you know, packed crowd. And I think the West Brom, you know, at the time, we had a little bit of, you know, we had a little niggly games of them. And I remember there was tackles flying in. It was a wet night. So it was, you know, it was a ferocious game. And like I said, keep coming back from going goals down. And like I said, to get the goal in the 91st minute or one of the last kicks of the game, as it was on my right foot, which there wasn't many of those. It was an incredible feeling, and celebrating with the fans that were behind that goal. To then, I think as soon as we scored, we went to extra time, and the team huddled because you can't go in the dressing rooms. And you know, Brunt turned around and said, "We've got them here," and we all just looked around and said, "Yeah, we have. They've gone. We've got this." And then Guilfi comes out with another wonder goal, 25 yards top corner, and like I said, I think we deserve to win. And then there was the antics at the end, which will always be memories. I think it was the last minute sending off for Malumbu, and he had a pop at Joby, and then all the stewards got involved, and I think the stewards got on the bus at one time, all kicking off. So definitely an eventful night.
Yeah, I remember those stewards. Well, the players coming out, trying to come over to the fans, because you got West Brom, you got the home fans just to your immediate left, and they're always the vocal lot as well. And the stewards were not having the Reading players coming over and throwing their shirts in the crowd or anything, were they?
No, we all tried to come and put our shirts in, and I remember they were saying that we were trying to get into the crowd and trying to wind the crowd up and get the crowd on the pitch. And we were like, no, we've just got a 91st minute equaliser and, you know, scored a wonder goal in extra time to get through in the cup. We want to celebrate with the fans that are here late on a Tuesday night and get back late and got work tomorrow. It's only right we celebrate together.
Yeah, it seems so simple when you say that, but they're probably West Brom fans, so probably didn't see it that way. Just as a point of interest, is when the ball falls to you in the 91st minute, chance to get an equaliser, big game, etc., do you have any idea that that's what you're doing? Or are you so focused and in the zone, you just kind of think, see ball, hit ball? Or do you have a little bit in the back of your mind that, or are you trying to shout, or trying to quieten that bit in the back of your mind that's saying about where you are and everything?
I think it's just instinct. Obviously, you practice every day since you're a kid, and to put yourself in those situations, and you do little technical drills of, you know, tight playing in around the box. So I think it was Jimmy that laid it off to me, edge of the box. So I think it was just natural to, you know, shift it out of my foot. I wanted to get it on my left, as you'd imagine, but couldn't. So I managed to get it on my right. And it was really one of those, just concentrating on hitting the target, you know, get a strong side foot behind it. And lucky for me, you end up in the far corner.
Yeah, it was a real shame that Villa was a bit of a step too far for that team in the quarterfinal that came round, 2-0 up. And then, again, I was watching this one back a couple of days ago, and it felt at the time like it was just too difficult. And that was a really decent Villa side. And I suppose it's just the way it happened was a bit heartbreaking. But looking back on it now as a fan, I've got nothing but pride for it, because it was a really good cup run from that team.
Yeah, I think we're all disappointed, especially, you know, going two goals up and being in the lead at half time. John Carew was unplayable second half. And yeah, got him and Heskey, and they said like Milner, and yeah, they had a real top team, Villa. So we always knew it was going to be tough, but I think you get yourself in the lead and you kind of hope that you can do all you can then to shut them out and hold on to the lead. But like you said, I think that team that day was just too good for us. And some days we've got to hold your hands up and say you're second best.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? And I was thinking, just to move to a different point, I was thinking about that team, that the sort of squad and everything that you played in around that time. One of the players in that team who wasn't particularly brilliant at the time, but has gone on to make a real career at the top level, is Mikel Antonio. And I was wondering what your sort of experience coming across him was, and how you sort of, or whether you saw that coming out of him as you played alongside him.
Well, to be brutally honest, no. Mikey was a great lad. He went on loan to Southampton for a little bit, and I live in Southampton. A lot of my friends are Southampton fans, and they said, "Oh, we've got this kid from Reading. He's quick, he's strong. Sometimes don't know what he's going to do. I think that he doesn't know what he's going to do." And I said, "Yeah, no, that's what he liked when he trains with us." And yeah, you know, but then he was a winger, and to be fair, you know, I said about Joby and Jimmy, you're not going to get in front of those when them boys are on form. You know, two of the top wingers in the league. So Mikey always had it tough, really. So we never got to see the best of him. We never got a run of games. And now he's converted himself into a front man. He's got even bigger and stronger. And, you know, he's having an absolute fantastic career. But I actually saw him not long ago at a West Ham game. And yeah, I'm delighted for him just because he's such a good lad and works so hard every day.
Yeah, it must be so strange, isn't it, when you see a player who, you know, you can kind of see what he's trying to do, but then for him to, as you say, convert to a striker, it must be difficult. Is there times as a player when you think, I've got to completely change my game here, or there's, you know, there's not going to be much of a future for me?
Yeah, I think so. And I think some of the best players do that. You know, you see Cristiano Ronaldo's done it. Obviously, you're not putting them on the same level, but it's that type. You want to make yourself the best player you can be. And sometimes you've got to look in the mirror and say, right, actually, I'm going to change this, I'm going to change that, and I'm going to get in the gym, I'm going to get on the training pitch, I'm going to do my extras and look where it takes me. And then, obviously, Mikey's gone right the way to the top level now.
Yeah, another player who's done that is Gylfi Sigurdsson, a player that you must have worked alongside him quite a lot in that season because, you know, similar position, young player coming through, you had a bit more experience. What did you see at that time that made him so good?
Just a class act. Great lad, great person, top professional, and outstanding ability. There was no ever doubt in my mind or anyone in that squad that he was going to go on and be a top player. The teams that he's played for, the things that he's done, international football. I think every time you look at Iceland, you're like, who's going to score? Yep, Gylfi's going to score. Just a top player. And I enjoyed it more when Gylfi played in the 10 and I got to play behind him because he just made the game so easy. He was always on, always wanted the ball. So you just knew that you get half a yard and he was playing it around the corner, you break the lines and, you know, there's every chance that he's going to create something.
Yeah, in that summer then, Gylfi obviously left. There's that period in particular in Reading history, there was always a sense that you kind of had to sell one player to balance the books and keep the team going on. And as Sigurdsson left, did you kind of think, you know, similar-ish sort of player, maybe I can go into that number 10 role? Did you think there was a chance you could kind of step into a bit more of a starring role with him going?
Yeah, I thought I could play in the 10. I think we'd kind of changed it a little bit, though. And I think when Gylfi left, that's when Brian went to 4-4-2. Huntley got more of a run at the top, or he wanted people to go up the top with Longy. We were always trying to replace 20 goals from midfield with Gylfi, so it's always going to be difficult. But I always wanted to play more under Bri. Always, you know, felt I should have played more, but it wasn't to be. And you know, I try not to think too much on it.
Yeah, as you kind of suggest, there drifted in the outside a little bit, and the playoffs came round. And from the point of view of someone who is a unused sub in those sort of games, how is it watching those games from the bench? Obviously, you're kind of hoping I'll maybe get on here, but I suppose the Swansea game in particular. Total different game to the Cardiff away, the second leg of the playoff semi-final, which was just an absolute trashing of the opponent. But in the Swansea playoff final itself was such a different... Are you able to kind of sit back and just think, what am I watching?
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I think with the playoffs, you're part of a squad and you're part of a team and yeah, you want to play. I wanted to be playing. But you know, I'm there to support my team and when called upon, I'm there to play. I think I was a little bit disappointed because on the build-up to it, Brian pulled me and said, look, if we play Swansea in the playoffs, you're going to be playing because I need to play three in midfield because they play three in the middle and keep the ball so well, they'll just outnumber us in the middle of the park. Then the results on the last day of the season meant that we played Cardiff instead. So again, it went with 4-4-2, which was fair enough, two great results. But then I thought of them playing the final, Wembley, big pitch, you know, Swansea three in midfield. And, you know, it worked out the way that he said it probably would have because they just controlled the first half and pretty much won the game there and then because they overran us in midfield. So I think I was disappointed with that. Obviously, when we got back in the game and then Jem hits the post, I think if that goes on, we go and win the game.
Yeah, and I suppose if that goes in, then you probably come on as well because that's the playmaker comes in to maybe go and create a bit more space and get the win,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah, maybe. So, things could have worked out differently, but yeah, sadly they didn't. And sadly, we didn't go up. And again, I spoke to Bri again after and he said, look, if we'd gone up, it would have been better for you because the way the Premier League is, you need to be on the ball more, you get more space, you get more time. So it'd be more suited for you to play rather than the way he wanted to play in the Champs. So again, things could have worked out a lot different, but they didn't. And I don't look back with too much negative stuff about it, really, because I enjoyed every minute of my time at Reading.
No, absolutely. And I suppose one of the other thing that I was going to mention from the playoff final, you might have seen that one of the sort of things that happened on that sort of mad day that doesn't really, we don't really know too much about, I suppose, was J-Tab getting sent off, I think, at half time. And this is something that I've not, and Nigel Gibbs as well, I think, was sent from the touchline or something. What happened there?
I still don't know. My friends bring this up all the time. They always crack up about it, going, you know, because I think I came out of the tunnel, I was warming up and or done something, and then Tabby was being sent off. And it was like, oh, what's he done? I think he'd said something to the fourth official, but I don't know exactly what. And then, you know, Tabby was a funny one, so he was a quiet lad, and then something got on the wrong side of him. He just lost it, and the red mist was there, and then he was kicking off in the tunnel, kicking off in the dressing room. And I think to this day, I don't think anyone's still got to the bottom of what actually happened.
Yeah, and no, I suppose it's just one of those things that's lost to the annals of history, isn't it? And you said about the Premier League stuff there, and obviously to have a career that is, you know, in and around, you started in League One, then getting Championship, really good spell in the Championship, and then to go abroad and to have a few other spells and stuff at the end of your career. That Premier League thing, was that perhaps, you think, those sort of spells, Sheffield United, Reading, was that the sort of time you think the Premier League was so close but just couldn't quite get over the line?
Yeah, that's kind of my biggest regret when I look back at football. I think, you know, the Sheffield United team, that squad we had, definitely should have gone up that year. 100% should have gone up. And then with the Reading team as well, losing the playoffs. Obviously, we got, you know, promoted the year after, but obviously my contract was up and was leaving. So, you know, obviously gutted to not go and do that. I think if I did get there with one of those teams, I think, you know, I'd have probably stayed there for a long time, because I think it would have suited my game a lot more.
Yeah, that 2011-12 season, you went on loan with Millwall, and then you kind of came back and just weren't involved at all. Was there any, did you ever feel like you were going to be involved having come back, or were you trying to maybe leave in the January? How did that sort of all pan out for you?
It was a strange one. Millwall wanted to do it permanently, and they couldn't get a deal agreed with Reading. But just before that Christmas, I found out my dad was really sick and didn't have much time left, so it was a weird one that then, when they couldn't get the deal done, I was happy just to stay at Reading because, you know, I could see my dad every day and spend as much time with him. But, you know, because of that was all going on, I was just so focused on my football, and I trained like a madman every day. And even all the lads were saying, well, like, your best player every day in training, like, Bri's got to stick you back in soon. He's got to play you. And my loan spell was pretty good at Millwall. I played very well there. And then, you know, for whatever reason, and I found out at a later date that Bri thought that my head wasn't quite on it because what was going on in my private life, he didn't put me in when he was tempted to. And I said, well, why didn't you just pull me? Because I was ready to play. That was my getaway. That was my football was get away from the other troubles and everything with my dad. So I was disappointed with that, really, because I felt that I could have played a part in that promotion winning team.
Yeah, it's interesting, because one of the things that people say about Bryan McDermott is that his man management was excellent. But I suppose in that scenario, as a manager, you've kind of got to take everything into account. And I suppose it's difficult for you to, you know, would you have felt tempted to go in and say, like, I'm desperate to play? Or did you do that and go in and say, you know, I am able to do this?
No, I didn't. I just thought that by me performing the way I did every day in training was enough to say, I want to play. I deserve a shirt on Saturday. I deserve to be in the team. But again, the team was winning everything. I think it was a couple of games, actually. I think it might have been Brighton away or somewhere where they picked up a few injuries. And I thought, oh, this is my opportunity to play and be involved. And I wasn't. I think kind of when that happened, I just knew that my time at the club was done.
No, absolutely. I was going to ask, actually, what were you doing on the sort of time when the league was won, the sort of trophy list and everything like that? I can't remember if you were ever out on it or out on the pitch or anything like that with the team. What were you doing during that?
No, I didn't go. Bri wanted me to go, asked me to go. The team went to Marbella, but I stayed. I was with my dad, and when they were in Marbella, he sadly passed away. So I'll never forgive myself if I went to Marbella and celebrated. And, you know, so I was mourning with my family when the team was celebrating. So that's why I wasn't involved in any of that.
No, that's totally fair enough. I suppose even as a footballer, you think of all the money and everything that comes with it, the fame. At the end of the day, family is something that just takes so much precedence, doesn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, my dad was the reason I played football and was so supportive, I was so close with him. So it was obviously a very, very difficult time for myself. And for the first time probably ever in my life, that football was second and didn't really matter.
No, absolutely. And you went on then, and as I say, had a bit of an interesting career after that. Went around Portsmouth, Bristol City, went to CSKA Sofia as well, which is a move I always wonder about how these sort of moves come about, because when you go and play non-league and whatnot, I can think, oh, maybe you know someone at the club or you just want to play football. But someone at CSKA Sofia having a scouting report of all their local talent and everything, then going, oh, there's that guy, and bringing Brian Harrod in. How does that come about for you?
So agent at the time had a lad working for him in his office who his dad was an investment guy, and he had invested money into CSKA Sofia to do, you know, around the ground, around the training ground. There was a lot of grounds and could build on. So he had done that. But as part of it, he wanted to bring over a few players. So the agent kind of said to him, look, I've got a couple of players you should look at. So he looked at myself and Mama Sidibe from Stoke, and decided to take us both over. Sold the dream. It was, you know, a brilliant contract, lovely place to live. You know, I was a bit older then, so, you know, my legs had gone a little bit. It was a slower pace of football. You know, it was sunny. I just thought, I want to experience foreign football before I finish. And it was a fantastic city. The lads were good. Like, really enjoyed that time of it. But then after the first sort of 6-7 weeks, the money dried up and they stopped paying. Didn't pay for my rent in my apartment, which was part of my contract. I didn't get paid, basically. So I had to cancel my contract and come back.
Yeah, so it's a strange scenario, isn't it? Because it's kind of typical football in a way, isn't it? Where there's a lot of promises, there's a lot of kind of hope and a lot of talk of people putting money in. But it so often is the case, isn't it, where they perhaps get about, you know, as you say, 6 weeks into it, and then realise that money tap is going to have to keep going on and keep going on. And in a way, that's why we only have a select few sort of billionaires that actually put money into football these days.
Yeah, exactly. And I said, like, I got promised the world, we all did. And then I said it all dried up and became a difficult time in the end. And then, you know, I got close with Mama Sidibe out there, and then he was racially abused really badly. And yeah, the fans were trying to get on the bus because he missed a penalty against Levski in the Eternal Derby. And I just thought, this isn't for me. This isn't right. And I think you get lucky in England. You've got the PFA and everything to protect you. So your contracts are always safeguarded. But over there, it's a bit of a free-for-all.
Yeah, and that draws us on nicely to your current career. And it's interesting that you spent a few 2 years going around the non-leagues, a few little stints here and there. And I suppose a lot of players, you must get into this sort of time, you must know that the end of career is coming, you've got to have a plan for what you're going to do. At what point did you start planning on becoming a football agent?
I think it was when I went to Eastleigh, to be fair. I mean, Eastleigh's my hometown club. My mum and my brother live a stone throw away from the ground. They were having they had a bit of investment, were having a go at it, trying to get promoted to the league for the first time. And I knew that I was going to finish that summer. I was picking up loads of niggly injuries. My legs were killing me. My hips had gone, you know, and nearly failed a medical when I went to Birmingham because my hips were in such a bad state. So I just wanted to try and finish on a bit of a high and try and get my local club promoted to the Football League. And to be fair, if we got promoted to the Football League, I might have had another year at it. But I just knew that once we lost in the playoffs that I was done. And while I was there, because you only trained 3 days a week, on my days off, I started to get into the agency stuff. I started to go watch players play, started to go meet players, started to, you know, do all my work off it. And I just really enjoyed it and thought, right, I'm enjoying this more now than playing football. And let's get a head start on my next career and get going.
Just as a tangent off that point, made me think then, when as you say, your hips and your legs and everything are going, this is a few years ago now, fast forward to now, are those, as a ex-footballer and other ex-footballers, you know, who might have those sort of problems, do you eventually get over them and actually like start to find a bit of normality? Or are you basically like, you can't run more than 30 yards again because of how your body has been?
No, I stupidly got my boots on the weekend and played my mates in a Vets game, and I played 90 minutes, and yeah, I'm still walking like an 8-year-old man today. It's just, yeah, the back and the hips, it's just wear and tear of just years of obviously putting your body through it. So yeah, you don't really get over it. You need to be careful. You know, if I do a lot of traveling for work with my back, I need to always get my back sorted out. And it's just there's a problem that I'm gonna have to deal with.
Yeah, and that agency stuff then, let's go back to that and talk about how you know, as a fundamental point, when you're setting up an agency, how do you start drawing upon your contacts in the game? Do you have other people involved in the business as well? How do you go about that?
Yeah, well, so obviously you said that at the end of the career, obviously I've moved around a bit more than I wanted to, but through that, it's gave me loads of great contacts and lots of friends in football. You know, so what players that, you know, the younger players that are still playing, players I played with are now becoming coaches and managers, and now coaches and managers that I had are still coaches and managers. So I've got a really extensive contact list. I always thought I was quite a popular guy in the dressing room. I captain nearly every team that, you know, I played in. So, you know, I've still got everyone's phone numbers that I've ever played with. So I still talk to everyone. So I just felt that it was the right thing to do. Didn't really fancy going on the coaching roles. So I just thought that, you know, I'd rather be a personal coach to all my players to look after and try and help them throughout their careers.
Yeah, you have a quick flick through your Instagram. You see former Reading player James Henry there, Conor Hourihan. So there's some good players here. Some players that, you know, there's certainly connections to the clubs you used to be a part of. And how do you, you know, in terms of being an agent, this is kind of a more general question, but how do you get a player to sign up to your particular agency compared to another one?
I think we offer that personal touch. I mean, my business partner has been in the business for 13, 14 years, so his contacts are extensive as well. Obviously, I've just finished playing, really, so, you know the game really well, made some good decisions in my career, made some bad ones, so hopefully I can advise them before players, you know, make mistakes that maybe I did. I think we're just honest. You know, we put the players first. You know, we've done one deal this summer that we could have earned a lot more money moving him somewhere else, but he wanted to go to the other club, and it was what was right for him. So we've done that rather than, you know, what we do fine with some other agents. It's all about getting paid and getting their money in the bank, where for me, it's all about the players playing football and being happy.
Yeah, that's the thing you hear a lot, isn't it? You hear good agents and bad agents. And I suppose when you must have come across some bad agents, what sort of things do you find they're trying to do?
I think it's just not having the players' best interest at heart. I think they put the agent's fees at the front of it all rather than that do a good job for someone and you'll get paid. And that's what we do differently. We do a good job for our players. We make sure they're happy. We make sure everything's done for them. And like in any business, you do a good job, you'll get paid well. So I think I say it to all my young players as well, like say about football now, there's money in football. It's not like the old days where you had to chase the money. You do well and the money, you'll earn the money. So you concentrate on doing a good job. And likewise for us, we'll concentrate on a good job for our players and obviously we'll earn.
Yeah, I was wondering as well, have you had any dealings with Reading? Probably can think of, you know, the people you used to be around. Maybe there's a couple of people still at the club that you might have been in contact with. Don't have to name any names, any transfer gossip stuff. Yeah. But how have you found when you've ever had to deal with Reading?
Yeah, not really. Obviously, I've tried to push some players to the club before for Reading to look at, and you know, either not been able to afford to do it or not been for them. So I've not actually done a deal at Reading as an agent. I don't have a player there either, which I'll get asked a lot, actually, why I don't have a player there, but I don't. I've not had too many dealings there, but I think it's always one as well. You don't know who to talk to because it just changes so much, not just manager, everyone in the back room as well.
Yeah, and Reading, I suppose, one of those clubs, kind of like Wolves as well, where it feels like there's one agent, as Wolves, obviously, everyone knows that George Mendes is there. And how do you find that as maybe, is that an avenue that maybe agents would pursue more? It seems like a pretty lucrative one if you can just kind of have your own club.
Yeah, there's a few that do it. I'm not sure morally how that would sit with me. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'd want to be put in that situation. I like to look after my players and do a good job for the player. I think that sometimes if you're working for a club, maybe you're looking after your own interest and the club's interest more than the players. And you know, as I said before, I want to be a player's agent. I was a player and I want to look after the players. So I think I'd rather just stay on this side of it.
Absolutely. And final question then. Thank you very much for chatting with us this evening. It's been a really interesting insight into how, you know, the highs and the sort of lows as well as to being at the squad and everything like that. It's always really interesting to hear the stuff that you don't hear about, because we all remember the winning playoff semi-finals and winning FA Cup games. But to hear about everything as well is really interesting. So thank you very much for that. And the final sort of questions then is to looking back to Reading now as a club, where do you sort of see the club in the team heading towards, you know, the next season and beyond that?
Well, I think obviously the start they've had is fantastic. You look through it now and I think they've got a strong core of players, good experienced players in the Championship. You know, the centre-halves and, you know, and the front men know this level well. Then look into, you chuck in some youngsters like Elise and people like that, and you go, you've got a real good blend again. Similar to probably the squad that we had. We had good experienced champ players and some good youngsters coming through, and I think that's the right mixture. And I think the Championship this year, it's a ferocious season and every year, but even more this with, you know, shorter pre-season, more games, more travelling. It's about keeping everyone fit. And I think if they can keep that main group fit, and that main core fit, I think they have a great chance of staying where they are and hopefully progressing. And at the end of the day, goal promotion to the Premier League.
And I suppose with the way that football's finances is kind of going, the big question mark that hangs over everything at the moment, do you think that the promotion, I suppose, over this year or next year, it will really be the sort of thing that can make or break a club, whether it happens or not, can't it?
Yeah, 100%. I think everyone, it's always been that golden dream to get to the Premier League for Championship clubs, but this year it's magnified even more just because of the financial troubles, and I think every club is going to need Premier League money until they get fans back in. So, you know, it's that dream to get there as any owner or anyone involved with a football club to know that you're going to be financially secure for the next couple of years, because with another lockdown looming, who knows what the future holds.
Absolutely. And thank you very much then, Brian, for popping on. It's been really interesting to hear from you.
Cheers, Mark. Thanks. Anytime, mate.
You're listening to the Tarhurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.